We're welcoming back to the show Gerald Walker, who's a professor of creative writing at Emerson College. You might recall our conversation with him from a few years ago about his memoir, The World in Flames, A Black Boyhood in a White Supremacist Doomsday Cult. Now, Walker's latest collection of essays will sit you right down with its power and its clarity. He tells stories of his life as a Black parent, teacher, writer, husband in America. It is full of humor, love, pain, and a very clear message of resilience. The collection is How to Make a Slave, and it was a National Book Award finalist. Professor Walker, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me back, Tiziana.
So in reading this collection, it felt to me like it is about a lifetime and that it was the work of a lifetime. Is it? Was it a lifetime of work for you to get here?
Well, it certainly was at least 15 years of writing. The oldest essay, I think I wrote it back in 2006, and the most recent one I wrote in 2020. So it's been 15 years worth of material, but the content certainly spans 50 years of my life.
When you wrote the first essay, were you working towards a collection, or did each of these essays sort of stand alone as you wrote them?
Everyone was a standalone essay. I simply get moved by a notion and I want to explore it on the page, and I write an essay and then I send it out and try to publish it. And it never occurred to me to sit down and write a collection of essays from start to finish. I simply wrote them and assembled them.
So that's really striking, because I got to tell you, you put them all together, they tell a story. So is that coincidental, or did you heavily curate which ones you put into this book? I mean, this is a story of a man becoming a man, and it seems being at peace with the man he is.
I think it probably speaks to the fact that writers, and perhaps all people, have certain preoccupations, and we have themes that we return to over and over and over again, and until maybe we reach some resolution, we grapple with them to try to see what we can make of why they plague us so. So I think that I come back to certain themes over and over again, and that's why the collection is cohesive, despite the fact that they were written very separately.
So let's dive into the content a little. You know, every word in the book feels carefully chosen, and I know the title was in the title essay, How to Make a Slave. Can you explain the significance of the title for us?
Sure. The title is from a famous quote from Frederick Douglass. Right before he's about to fight and beat up his master because he's simply had enough, he says, "You have seen how a man was made a slave. You shall see how a slave was made a man." And that's the moment in the narrative when he simply rises up and no longer will allow himself to be treated less than a human.
Is that the first essay you wrote?
No. That's probably midway through the collection. I think I wrote that essay in 2014.
Do you remember which was the first one you wrote, and can you tell us about it?
Sure. The very first one is Dragon Slayers, and it's a tribute to my professor at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, James Allen McPherson. It was the first attempt of me being an essayist. My MFA degree from Iowa is in fiction writing. And after laboring as a fiction writer quite unsuccessfully for, about 15 years, my wife said, "Why don't you try nonfiction? Because all of your stories are thinly veiled stories from your actual life. All you do is change names and locations. So just try to write a true story and see if that will make a difference." And I refused to do it. And she kept plaguing me until finally I gave in and said, okay, I'll write one. I wrote Dragon Slayers. I sent it out. It was accepted for publication, my first publication. And it then was selected for Best American Essays the following year. So from that point forward, I've been an essayist.
Then you need to listen to her, clearly.
No, that's funny. That's what she said.
So one of the things that's really striking about that essay, right? So James Allen McPherson, as you said, the first Black writer to win the Pulitzer Prize for fiction. You sort of try to call him out one-on-one, and I feel the nightmare unfolding as that story unfolds. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I definitely tried to call him out, but it was a calling out in response to being called out. I was in his class, and he was about to have my piece workshop discussed by my peers, and he, before he allowed the discussion to begin, he prefaced the class comments by saying that a lot of Black rappers are selling out their race by using stereotypes in their material, but these are not the lives these people actually live. And they're frauds, these artists. And then he held up my story and said, this writer is doing the exact same thing. And that devastated me. I couldn't believe it because he was, I had just become acquainted with his work the summer before that workshop. And I saw him as my literary model and I idolized him. And the very first meeting we had in class was for him to accuse me of doing what I thought at the time. And even now, it's probably one of the greatest sins a black person can do, which is to trade their race for some personal gain.
Do you feel like that's what you were doing? And how did, I mean, how did you journey from there? That is harsh, harsh criticism.
Yes. I was not doing it intentionally. I was simply a new writer who had some volatile material and I was incapable of handling it. So I didn't know what I was doing. I assumed that my charge as an artist, as a black artist, was to champion the plight of blacks. And to me, that meant pointing out the sins of whites and the horrors of white treatment and of racism. So I spent a lot of time in my first stories talking about white oppression and how we had been so demoralized and defeated by whites that our lives were miserable. It was victimhood narratives. And what McPherson wanted me to see was that African Americans are anything but victims, that we have spent centuries overcoming mistreatment. And he wanted me to talk more about the heroic nature of African Americans and not talk about the aspects of black life that are stereotypes and in fact were contrary to my very life. Otherwise, I would not have made it out of that community.
You said you thought you were following what your charge was as a black artist. What do you see your charge is as a black artist now?
My charge now, and McPherson made this clear to me, was to move beyond the stereotypes that plague African Americans and see what I can present to readers that will in some way have us focus on the things that unite us, on our universal values, on the things that make us all members of the human race and not simply in these separate categories that make it easy for people to have enemies and opposition.
Anger is kind of a presence to me as a reader in this book. You write about it in a few of the essays. It's a real double-edged sword for you. How do you think about anger now, your anger, the anger we're living with in 2020, and how do you grapple with it as an artist?
I've been known to get angry. I mean, anyone who reads the collection, in fact, we just spoke about it when McPherson did what he did in my workshop. I blew my top. I mean, I was a 20-something-year-old kid who stormed into the office of the first Pulitzer Prize winner for fiction as an African-American in this country's history. If that's not an example of someone who's got an anger problem, I don't know what is. So I do get angry, but the other side of my anger, and this is also something McPherson wanted me to focus on, is a sense of humor. And African Americans have always drawn on their sense of humor to get through difficult times. And so what I wanted to do in the collection was to find a way to combine the tragedy of life with the comedy of life, and also talk about some pretty tough issues, but find a way to have it go down more easily. And I think humor is the way to do that.
Well, let's have you read something. I'm going to ask you to read a section from the essay Breathe. It deals with anger a bit. It deals with race. It deals with your kids who really feature in your essays. I wonder if you could read a bit for us.
Sure. One cause of your son's seizure, the doctor says, could be syphilis. Ask what's the basis for such speculation, given that no physical exam was conducted, no blood work drawn, no urine sample taken, and that your son, who was lying on the hospital bed before you looking bewildered, is 12. Obviously, it's not unheard of for 12-year-olds to have this disease, she responds, which is impossible for you not to hear as, you're black, so I shouldn't have to tell you this. But it is possible, apparently, not to lose your temper. Be grateful for the article you read last month about the benefits of breathing exercises in times of high stress, because the one you're doing now is actually working. Before speaking, take another deep breath, followed by a slow exhale, focusing all the while on the air passing through your lungs. There. Now tell your family it's time to leave. Marvel at the calmness of your voice and wish you'd discovered this exercise years ago, long before your high blood pressure and reputation for being angry. Pat your son's shoulder as you nudge him upright. Take him home.
That's Emerson College Professor of Creative Writing Gerald Walker reading from the essay Breathe in his new collection, How to Make a Slave. Professor, what happened next in that story? That happened in your life. What happened next?
It is a true story. We took my son home, and I managed to leave the hospital without blowing my top. It was not easy, but I did it thanks to my breathing exercises. We went home, and my son had another seizure, and so we decided not to take him back to the original hospital. We drove him into Boston, and we went to Boston Children's Hospital, where he ultimately was diagnosed as having a neurological disorder that causes adolescents to seize when they are thrust into motion. So whenever he starts to move very quickly, he'll have a seizure. It's a rare disease. We were thankful to have an answer for why it was happening, but it is pretty much harmless and it's controlled with medicine, and we're told that he'll grow out of it in his early 20s.
So he's okay now?
He is okay. He's still on medication, but it will pass.
So one of the things that's striking about that moment and that essay is it is both an iconic human moment, right? Whether one relates to it as a parent or if one has faced discrimination, whether one relates to it there. But it's also really a Boston moment because you're both facing this racism that Boston is known for, but also you can drive into town and receive some of the best health care in the world. You seem to allow the complexity of Boston to appear in your essays without focusing on it. Is Boston a character here? And is it a character in your own life experience?
No, I would have to say. but Boston is on the periphery of these stories. A lot of these stories, especially the ones that involve my kids, the settings are secondary. I simply happen to be in a place. But the primary focus for me in these pieces is often my family, usually myself, and I'm simply trying to make it through some stressful situations unscathed, and to make sense of the senselessness that life often presents itself to be.
When I finished the book, I thought, man, this book is unapologetic. And what I mean by that is it reads like a set of essays by a man who has experienced pushback all his life for who he is and is now telling the world a little bit of every corner of that life and saying, I am at peace with this man. You can think whatever the hell you want. I'm good. Are you a man at peace? These are not peaceful times.
I love that description.
Thank you.
I am a man at peace. I one of the things about being a personal essayist is that you, if you aren't at peace when you start writing personal essays, you will be by the time you finish, because the genre requires openness and honesty, and with openness and honesty comes judgment and sometimes criticism, and you have to be prepared for that. And if you aren't, you're writing in the wrong field. But I am prepared for it. I am at peace with who I am, or I would have continued to write fiction and hide behind that form rather than stepping from behind the veil and saying, this is who I am, this is what I believe, this is what I know, and people can either accept it or not, but I'm not going to shy away from sharing it.
What's next?
Well, that's a good question. I just sat down to start writing the new book, and I think it's going to be a sequel to this one, another collection of essays, and we'll see what I haven't covered that I can still cover with hopefully some humanity and some humor.
Well, I will be there for it. Gerald Walker is a professor of creative writing at Emerson College. His latest collection is How to Make a Slave and Other Essays. Professor Walker, thanks for the book, and thanks for spending time with us today.
Thanks for the invitation.